the Wood County Prevention Coalition podcast, dedicated to bringing educational information to prevent substance abuse and help individuals achieve a healthy well-being.
Hello, my name is Tina Bradley, and you are listening to the Wood County Prevention Coalition podcast. I am the coordinator for the Drug-Free Communities Grant, as well as the coordinator for the Prevention Coalition in Wood County, Ohio. Today's subject is prevention education updates. For those who don't know us yet, I'll read our mission. We are a coalition of compassionate community members working together to coordinate high quality programs for the prevention of youth substance abuse in Wood County, Ohio. Our vision is helping youth be drug-free, responsible, and productive citizens. Our tagline is uniting for a drug-free Wood County since 2004. Let's take a few moments before we start to do further introduction.
Good morning. I'm Kyle Clark, Prevention Education Director here at the Wood County Educational Service Center.
I'm Angela Patchen, Prevention Program Manager here at the ESC.
I'm Annie Pillmore. I am a Prevention Education Specialist out of Elmwood and North Baltimore.
Wonderful. Thank you, everyone. Perhaps it's best to begin with, how did prevention education start in Wood County, and tie that into its need, why it's vital to continue the need to move forward here in Wood County. Kyle and Angie, I'm sure you both have thoughts on this.
Yes. Easy to explain. Back in the 90s, there was a push for prevention education around the country. It happened in Wood County for us back in 2003 when our local Alcohol, Drug Addiction, and Mental Health Services Board saw the need for something to occur, and they reached out with a proposal, and we were able to write a small grant that allowed the Educational Service Center to provide prevention education in schools. We started with just one program. It was called Life Skills. It was an alcohol and tobacco and other drug education program. And from there, it grew. One of the things we needed to do was to continually evaluate and collect data on where we were, so we created a survey, and we have continued to use that survey every 2 years since 2004, and we've added a lot to it as the needs change. The fact that as time has gone by, legislation and other things going on in our culture and our society have allowed us to increase our grant and increase our programs. And that's really how we got started. Angie?
And then I think we continue because, you know, drugs are still a problem and things change, you know, so hardly any kids are smoking cigarettes, but they're vaping, and that just kind of came out of nowhere. There's also the suicide, gambling, relationship violence, social emotional learning. So prevention doesn't just mean drugs and alcohol anymore. It includes all of these other cultural issues that we're having.
And we need to address everything yearly. You know, we think of starting a program and people think one and done, right? And really that's true for that one grade level. But we have to remember those kids age out every year, and so we're able to expand and increase our scope of curriculum so that it's age appropriate and we can continue to have those conversations. And then, of course, every year you graduate seniors, and every year you're bringing in new kindergartners, and it just keeps moving. So,
and just developmentally, that it's typical for kids to, you know, be influenced by their parents at a younger age, and then they start to be more influenced by peers later on, and trying to be individual and fit in, and the belief that everybody's doing it can impact their choices. But we know that most kids are not doing it. It's just a perception that this is what everyone's doing, and then that makes it easier to engage in an activity yourself. And we see that at the college. You know, the college sees the same things when they do data and research like we do.
You know, someone coming into all of this new a year, a little bit over a year ago, I can just two thoughts. Number one, I have seen very few communities that have the data bank that we do. This prevention education began back 2004-ish, I guess, in that time frame, and the collection of the data going on. I often am in webinars where there are coalitions that either have no data at all, have never collected it. They're using statewide data for their outcomes. So it's not specific to their communities, but also the matter of some of them kind of quit when COVID occurred. There are still some that never got back on track and began providing either the education and or the gathering of the outcomes, the surveying. And the other piece is, wow, when you look at, and I think it's there are several things, but especially the alcohol use, the huge decline that occurred from like 2004 to today. Certainly, it's still the drug of choice. However, I'm wanting to say it was like 70-some percent, 73, and it's declined all the way to, I don't know what it is now, but I think
it's in the 30s.
In the 30s?
I think.
It's huge. It's huge. And so those are just two observations I have coming into this, having had no handle on it prior to this. But Kyle, perhaps you can share how legislative updates here in Ohio have influenced prevention education mandates.
Yeah, I'd be glad to do that, but I would like to jump back to your thought.
Certainly.
With survey history, we've conducted our survey every 2 years. We're very fortunate to have a gentleman that has taken great interest in Wood County. He's from Wood County, and his name is Dr. Bill Ivoska, and he was able to do his initial research in Northwest Ohio, Lucas County, and Wood County back in the 90s, and when he when we received our grant, we reached out to him, and he continued his work with us. The survey is designed very similar to the University of Michigan studies, which that particular instrument is used by the federal government in all of its research with drug abuse with youth. And so we align very closely many of our questions with the federal level questions so that we can actually compare ourselves to the nation. Ohio specifically has two or three instruments that they recommend schools use, and so we don't have as accurate of information, and many of their questions are not aligned with the University of Michigan studies. Therefore, it's tough for us to compare ourselves to other schools in Ohio, but it's very, very easy for us to look at where we are in the nation. So that's always been a challenge. During COVID, we were very, if there was a good thing about COVID, and there's nothing good about it, but we were able to collect our survey data, since it's every 2 years, we were able to collect it just before we shut down. We had just finished writing our report when schools closed. And when schools were reopening 2 years later, that was the year that we were able to survey again. So for us, time-wise, it worked out in a way that we have pre-COVID data and then COVID data so that we can now start looking at what do we think is happening as a result of being in a shutdown and kids being either in school or partial school, at home schooling, online stuff. and a mixture. So we can start to look at how all that has affected mental health, relationship violence, gambling, and alcohol and other drug use. So that is been an interesting thing, and we're still looking at that data and trying to evaluate all that. Getting into your second question, legislative updates and things, over the years as legislation changes, it does warrant us to look at how we're providing prevention and what might be happening at the time. And I'm going to jump back again in answering this question with your comment on alcohol reduction. Back in 2008, we were seeing a pretty level, from 2004 to 2008, a pretty level usage of senior binge drinking. And I'll use that as our example rather than to look at all of the different alcohol questions we have at all the grade levels. But senior binge drinking was, as Angie said, I think up in the 70s. And we were able to write a grant called the Reducing Alcohol in Secondary Schools Grant. It was a four-year grant. And it gave our staff a lot of training. It gave our schools a lot of information. We were able to go into the schools and work with the students and had quite a lot of successful campaigns. In fact, that's where our theme, The New Cool, came from. It was derived by the kids. And we even followed up with that with our elementary students, and they came up with our mascot, Mr. Be Cool, and named him. And so we've always had that little guy around to help us out. But we've been able to drop binge drinking from 73% or 70-something percent, I can't remember now exactly the number, to the, I think, upper 20s. And that's been a huge decrease, and it's stayed fairly level at that point. Not that we can't improve upon it, but it has. So that's one example of how societally or culturally things change, and we're able to, and grants come out, and we're able to look at things and add to our programming. But legislation also affects us, and one of the first ones that affected us was back in 2016, I believe, the marijuana issue was put on the ballot for recreational marijuana in Ohio. That bill was ultimately defeated, that constitutional question that was put to a vote by the voters. But shortly after that, because legislators did not want to run the risk of a constitutional change, which is very hard to control or change, they decided that it might be the best thing to do to legalize the medical side of marijuana. So we now in Ohio have legalization of cannabis for medical reasons. And that has brought to our table a big change in how we talk about marijuana with the kids, because now it's become more socially acceptable. They see it as, if doctors recommend it, they can't prescribe it, but they can recommend it, then it must be safe. And so we've reduced the fear of harm in youth, and it's become more acceptable. It's also easier to obtain, because as parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles are starting to get medical marijuana or medical cannabis, it becomes easier for the youth to get a hold of it and experiment with it. Most recently, we did have a change in our gambling laws, and Ohio in Senate Bill 29 legalized sports gambling in Ohio. And that will take full effect next year. And with it comes all kinds of new challenges. We're already seeing a little spike in our gambling survey numbers. And our county data and our college data that we are also starting to collect has shown an increase in adult gambling and in college youth gambling, especially among males. So our next challenge is to really get our hands on this problem, potential issue, and start to figure out ways that we can provide programming on gambling. And we have done that. Most of our prevention specialists add the word gambling as one of our risky behavior terms that we use, and along with all of the other asset building that we do in our programs, we're working on gambling as well. Suicide prevention has also been addressed by the legislators, and in House Bill 123, I believe, was passed a year ago. It goes into full effect next school year, so the fall of 23, and that legislation requires schools to provide 1 hour of suicide prevention training or education each year in grades 6 through 12, and that we have been preparing for, and we have trained our staff, and I'm going to let Angie maybe explain a little bit more about those prevention programs.
That ties in well with some of the updates that are going on. Angie, mm-hmm. If you could, please.
Yeah, we've, in response to House Bill 123, we've adopted a couple of programs. One is called Lifelines Suicide Prevention, and the other one is Teen Mental Health First Aid. And so our staff are incorporating those and started that already in last year and this year with the districts getting it into a couple of grade levels as they prepare to, you know, give that at least 1 hour of suicide prevention programming to all grades 6 through 12, which is a lot. That's a big change to make. So we're working it in so that by next year we'll have that ready. And then also in House Bill 123, they talked about relationship violence. And so our staff are trained in a program called Safe Dates, and they can use that. We've adopted other programs like DBT Steps A, which is a universal prevention program adopted from the DBT therapy that's using some of the skills to help kids with the social-emotional learning, as we're seeing a lot of increased suicide ideation and attempts in our data from a lot of students, and, you know, bullying and that kind of thing. And so the relationship violence isn't just about dating. It is called Safe Dates, but it also just talks about, you know, relationships, all relationships really, that they, you know, can and should expect to get, you know, respect and what are appropriate boundaries and that kind of thing. So, and then like I said, you know, just mindfulness and some of the other important skills that kids need to have for coping, because there's a lot of anxiety out there. We don't, you know, ask questions specifically about anxiety, but everybody knows it's there. So, yeah, I would say that's how we're addressing those things.
And they all go hand in hand, mm-hmm. when the anxiety is up or when mm-hmm. other factors, like, say, if they're gambling, mm-hmm. then it goes hand in hand. Mm-hmm. Perhaps substance abuse is the next level of what occurs.
So, right.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
There's definitely a correlation. We can't say one causes the other, but there is a correlation.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Mm-hmm. Well, we're fortunate today we were able to get one of our prevention education specialists to join us. Annie, you've got about a year under your belt now as a Wood County prevention education specialist. Can you share with us, please, what this last year has been like for you?
Yeah, thank you. This last year has been really good, but very, very busy. I am placed at two different schools, so I am at Elmwood and North Baltimore. So in terms of last year, it was just really busy in getting to know each school individually, what their policies are, what prevention they wanted or needed with their students, getting to know the students themselves, and then also going on maternity leave last year. So that kind of, you know, changed some plans in terms of, you know, I spent the first semester just getting to teach as many classes as I possibly could before I left. And then upon coming back, again, just getting in anything I could before the school year ended, especially in terms of testing at the end of the year and different special events and end of the year activities. So it was just an all around busy year. But some of my classes that I taught last year, a lot of things that Kyle and Angie have already mentioned, I did a lot of life skills classes, both in middle school and high school. I actually did some at the elementary level as well. I did some suicide prevention with the Lifelines program that Angie had mentioned. I also did that at the middle and high school level as well. Really great program. I really like that one. So the students responded very well to that one for sure. And I did a program called Why Try in fourth grade as well. So that was more of a small group based, a lot of social emotional skills with that one. Just kind of trying to get the kids to learn and understand that even when things are hard, even when things are going on in their life, that there is a reason to still try, that there's, you know, some benefit to that. So on top of all the classes, also I meet one-on-one with students. A lot of times when they break school policy on using substances on school grounds, so I do meet one-on-one, provide that education piece to students that need it. And then something fun I was able to start last year was I was at both schools, I started a JTI group. JTI stands for Junior Teen Institute. It's a drug-free leadership program. So both schools at my middle school level, I have groups started. Good number, a good turnout, I would say, for each group, each school. But we've done things like promoting awareness around National Drug and Alcohol Fact Week. So I had the students look up some important facts. We put them on posters, kind of spread awareness throughout the schools. We wrote notes of encouragement for the third and fourth graders taking state tests in the spring, just to kind of give them a little bit of motivation. And then we also wrote some notes for Teacher Appreciation Week as well. So kind of that was at the end of the year. That was, again, coming back from maternity leave. So a little quick, you know, trying to get all that stuff in there and get it done before the end. But a lot of my students were very excited to continue that into this year, as well as potentially starting a group at the high school level, because a lot of my students were going to be into going into high school this year. So they had interest in starting that. So I'm hoping to get that all going this year. So it was a busy first year. Ari's turning into a busy second year so far, but really excited to get some more classes started. That's going to actually be happening this week. Classes are going to start to get going here, get my groups up and running, and I'm excited to see what we can do this year.
Wonderful. Congratulations mm-hmm. to you for all you were able to accomplish within that time frame. It wasn't really even a year. You just had a matter of some key time points there within
yes.
the time frame.
Yeah.
So that's very exciting. And I know a lot of the JTIs kind of stopped when COVID hit because no one could meet, everyone was remote, that sort of thing.
Yeah, the kids have missed out on, you know, two and a half years of good social activity that they need for part of their normal development. And this is one way of being able to help get that back on track.
That's exciting to see it emerge again, to have a rebirth. So any other thoughts for the good of the whole, folks? Is there any other thoughts from anyone? Well, hearing none, then our time is drawing to a close. Next time we will be back to discuss yet another prevention-related topic. In the meantime, check us out online at www.wcprevention.org, and you can link into our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram pages there as well. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This podcast is intended for educational purposes only. Those views expressed on the podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the Wood County Educational Service Center or the Wood County Prevention Coalition.